Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Just a note to say this podcast episode contains major spoilers and some challenging themes.
So I was on my way to the press screening this morning. I was walking over the bridge next to Embankment. So I was like feeling the soundscape, you know, like the tide is like lapping against the bridge below.
Lapping.
I love it. Bear with me. It's tidal, the Thames. The boats were going underneath. The train was going along next to me. I was like, vibes. And then I looked down and I was like, what is that? It was this really big object in the water floating towards the bridge. And my first thought was, oh my god, it's a body. What am I looking at? So I was still walking along. I like slowed down a little bit, but I was like trying to see whilst I was walking. But the bridge is quite high, obviously, so I was like trying to like peer through. It was a bin.
Oh my god.
It was like, the big litter bins that you get along South Bank. It was just one of those attached to like that blue string, like the cord. So it was like someone had taken the bin out on a leash and then just chucked it in the Thames.
On a leash.
And I was like, I looked at it and it was just like bobbing along, like floating. So it must have been empty. But I was just like, my first reaction was, I just have to tell Joyce. So I just saw this bin floating this morning.
Do you ever feel like a floating bin? Sitting on the Thames, wanting to start again.
I did look at it and think, me!
Oh my god, no, when you said a buddy, that's
your, the look on your face, I thought maybe that wasn't the right thing to say.
No, it's like not. A constant fear of mine is to find a buddy.
Yeah,
when
me
I'm just
too.
Out and about.
Me too. I'm you're always just like, oh, all the time.
Oh my god.
Watch too much true crime.
This is where you saw Ben and thought, buddy! Okay.
Well, at first I thought it was a massive, like, suitcase trunk.
Yeah.
I was very confused. And then I was like, is this something more sinister? And I was like, no. And then it just said litter on the side. And I was like, oh, it's just one of those black bins.
How did it get there?
I want to know the so origin weird. Story. Why is there a bin in the Thames? But then
it is Monday morning. Yeah. It is Monday morning. Just had a weekend.
Yeah, someone was like,
I want to go to jail tonight.
What is the offence for chucking a bin in the Thames?
But, well, it's like a public bin, right?
Yeah, it belongs so it's to, public property.
Yeah, so destruction of vandalism, probably?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, I also saw, along the bridge, it said there was someone had nailed in, like, a printed sign saying, this has been painted with anti-graffiti paint. And right next to it was graffiti. And I was like, this is London.
Did you take a photo of that?
I wanted to.
Oh,
but
that's
just,
so good.
I was on my way here. I was like, oh, I just need
it's
to
like
get
a
to Joyce.
It's big fuck you to
things.
That side.
Honestly, yeah. So good.
Oh, wow. What a morning you've had.
Yeah.
I've just been in bed. But... And we're live.
Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I'm a homosexual!
Lesbian.
I'm
I'm a homosexual.
I have loved you the way they said.
You fancy gears?
I'm having a proper full-on gay crisis.
Hello and welcome to Gay Actually. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun old gay time.
Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
Of course.
Because I want to carry off badass lesbian chic like Kate Blanchett can.
Welcome. Hello everyone. Welcome back to Gay Actually. It feels like it's been weeks since we've recorded, but welcome to the UK Film Review podcast. This is where we do our monthly Gay Actually series, where we discuss all aspects of queer cinema, sometimes a bit of culture. If you're new, welcome. You can find us in all kinds of places. We also have our own channel on Spotify, Gay Actually. We have one episode on there so far, so catch up. I am Amber, and I am joined by Joyce, as always.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going just averagely great. Not bad. Not exceptional, you know.
Okay.
Just average. Okay. Yeah.
It's, thank you. The clocks go forward soon, so I'm hoping that it's going to make...
Is that it? But isn't this the one where we lose an hour of sleep?
We lose an hour, but it's going to be lighter for longer.
But I'm so busy right now, I'm so stressed out that losing an hour is really just not...
It's not, yeah, fair enough. It's
not working. No.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that next week?
No, 2 weeks.
The clocks.
Oh, the clocks.
Sorry, I don't know.
The clocks are changing next weekend.
The clocks.
Sunday night, we lose an hour.
Oh my God. Wait, I think I'm working on Sunday.
I think it's next week. I don't know. Listeners, if the clocks have changed already, sorry.
No, surely not.
This episode is literally coming out.
Who's coming out?
Not enough people.
I am working at 7:30 a.m. on Sunday. So I'm losing an hour, so basically I'm working at 6:30 a.m.
Ew! You're losing an hour sleep.
That's horrible. I'm going to sue.
I'm going to pray for you.
I'm going to take the clocks to court.
I'm going to take the clocks to court. Why is that something an American probably has done?
Mm. Well.
Oh my God! TikTok!
That was exceptional.
No, please. Anyway, you may have noticed that the episode did not go up last Thursday, and you might be thinking, why? Or you might be like, I didn't notice, I don't care. But regardless, today's episode, we are doing a BFI Flair 2023 special. I nearly said festival. We're doing the festival, but it's a BFI Flair special. For those of you that don't know, BFI Flair is the London LGBTQIA+ Film Festival. Wow, can I just say, we're halfway through, we're on the second week now. The films are incredible. I implore you all to go and see these films or catch them after the festival in whatever platform space they are, because they are so good. Are you enjoying what you've seen so far?
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. I love it. I mean, just the idea of the film festival. It's literally all so LGBTQ good. Queer films.
And critics as well. Like, the press screenings I've gone to, there's been so many queer critics, and whatever job they do. It's just so nice to be in that safe space. I've never been... This is my first festival. So it's nice to be in a room with such like-minded people, and we all want to support queer content, which is... what we're about too.
Yeah.
It's great. I feel like as well, I only went to a handful of screenings in person before the pandemic. So it's really weird dipping back into it. Because I don't know what you do, whether or not you watch a film and then write up your notes, or if you make notes as you go along. But for me, I make notes as I go along. But when I'm in a screening at the cinema or at the BFI, I don't. And it's actually really changed how I write, which is really interesting.
Mm.
Like, I kind of marinate on it for longer, and then I'm like, ooh, yeah, actually, I've remembered this thing that I didn't necessarily think about when I was watching it.
Yeah.
That's been an interesting process.
I don't think I've ever written notes while watching, except for, like, films that I watched specifically to write about, like, for a paper or whatever.
Yeah.
A paper, God. for an essay.
For my paper, sorry, for my thesis.
My American just came out.
Everyone's like, oh, we knew she was American the whole time.
But because for me, first of all, I'm lazy. But also, I just really enjoy watching a film without having to worry about thinking about it while I'm watching it.
Yeah.
So for me, afterwards, if I want to take notes, is I think, like for Tar, for example, mm-hmm. I think about the points that stood out to me. And afterwards, yeah. those are clear. You know, these things happen. These things stand out to me. So that sure. will be like my main bits in my reviewer, in my, this is what I think of it. And then it slowly fills up with the other things that I remember in between those main points. And that's kind of how I always went about it. I took a film criticism course in my undergrad. Did I tell you that?
No, that's cool.
It was actually really fun. It was really interesting. Like, I don't plan it like that, but that's kind of how my internal processing goes anyway.
Yeah, I just write down what I want and then make it make sense. I think that's kind of
But you write a lot. And I honestly, I respect that so much because I'm such a lazy person. Like, I don't write notes. My notes are all in my brain and then I forget things or they get scrambled.
Well, that's why I write everything down, because I do forget things and I get so frustrated in the middle. This has been happening more and more since the pandemic, but I'll just stop in the middle of a sentence because I'm like, okay, that's gone. That thought just went.
I really respect that you write so much. Like, you just show me your notes for... So my notes is on my notes app, and it's like... I mean, how big is it? How many words do you think that is? 200?
I don't know.
For all three films? And she has, like, 3 pages.
I don't know.
Of notes.
Well, just exposing ourselves right
now. Well, yeah. I mean, there's nothing new, obviously. Anyway.
Anyway.
I don't know why we're just going on tangents like crazy.
It's been a while. It feels like it's been ages. Yeah. I think it's been a while since we recorded in person.
Exactly.
Which people could probably tell because, A, my... even though I have a microphone, apparently I don't plug it in properly ever. And B, just our chairs creak all the time when we're actually in person because we both fidget. So, sorry, listeners. That happens. But yes, BFI Flair is running... It's been running since the 15th and it's running until the 26th of March. There is such a good selection this year of films. I saw the opening film, The Stroll. I would encourage everyone to watch it. It's so, so good. It basically talks about the lives of trans sex workers in the meatpacking district in the 80s, 90s and noughties. It's documentary style. One of the co-directors was actually a sex worker during that time. So it's her own testimony as well as women that she knew. Oh my God. It was so moving and so beautiful. Would recommend. Loved it. But we're not talking about that film today. Basically, for a lot of the films, that film and a lot of the other films, I've written a lot of reviews for UK Film Review. So this is just a shameless plug. If you want to read more about these films, go to the UK Film Review website, ukfilmreview.co.uk, and you can find all of the Flair content. I think it's just me that's covering it.
Good.
I am the queer guru of this magazine.
Hell yeah.
And Joyce.
Well,
we're talking about three of the films explicitly in this episode. There's three sections for BFI Flair. Bodies, Hearts and Minds, which I think is a beautiful way to categorise these films. So we've picked one from each category and we're going to talk about them. And then stick around, because if you like short indie films, we're going to shout out a few at the end. Short film shout out.
I love it.
Joyce, what is the first film we're going to be talking about today?
So, the first film that we're going to talk about is XXXY. Okay, and Amber is going to give us a wonderful introduction to this film.
So, XXXY is a Korean language film directed by So Young Lee and written by Sung Young Hong. So it's a Korean film, but it's got English subtitles. So the brief summary that the BFI have given is, an intersex teen and their friends navigate the complex feelings and urges that come with adolescence in this unique coming-of-age comedy. And I think that pretty much sums it up.
Comedy is a bit striking as a word.
Do you think?
I mean, it was comedic at some points, but I wouldn't call it a comedy.
Ooh! Explain your reasoning.
I mean, it didn't have, like, the comedy tropes, I would say.
Well, I guess not. Not Western comedy tropes, definitely not.
I mean, there were funny parts to it, but I don't think it was... It was more like a drama to me.
I think it felt very awkward, which is there were some moments that I was like, that's so uncomfortably awkward and teenage vibes. It was making me laugh out of sheer uncomfortability.
Same. I had so much secondhand embarrassment at some points. Yeah. I was like, guys.
It's just so being a
just
teenager.
Just lie.
Yeah.
Don't be honest.
So the protagonist is Jay. And Jay, I was trying to figure out what pronouns Jay went by. Because a lot of people refer to Jay as he.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's necessarily right either. So I don't know if we should just use they.
Let's just use they. Because
I think they is a good option, just to be inclusive and just to be mindful. Because Jay is intersex.
And Jay doesn't go by any particular gender anyway.
No, exactly.
So.
Exactly. So I think, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. They is good. So Jay has been homeschooled their entire life. And then their parents enroll them in high school for the first time. So they're a raging teenager, lots of things are going on, but the general premise is at some point Jay is going to have to decide whether or not they are going to live as male, as a boy, or as female, as a girl. So very binary distinction. I think Jay's parents, they are very, very cool and relaxed.
Yeah, I mean, as Jay's uncle says, they're the most liberal people.
Yeah, exactly. So. It's very nice because... So Jay lives with their mum, their dad, and their dad's boyfriend. Because I think at the start, it's kind of implied that Jay's mum marries Jay's dad because he needs to hide the fact that he's gay and has a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of all live together, and it works for her because she's a doctor and... Then they adopt Jay, because Jay is obviously born intersex, and the implication is that Jay is abandoned. So Jay's parents adopt her, and it's very nice, but Jay's parents adopt them, and it's a very nice start of the story. It's very warm and friendly, mm-hmm. and then high school, boom! Terrifying hormones, teenagers, scary pop culture vibes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very long synopsis, but basically Jay has the support of best friend Sarah. Sarah is awesome.
I love Sarah. Oh, wow.
She is just so unconditionally supportive. She's the only one that knows Jay is intersex. It's very, very comfortable. Like, yeah. She's just great. But then on the flip side, Jay meets a teenage guy called Wu Ram for the first time. And there's a little bit of tension.
Hmm.
But then, so what happens is they meet when Jay is kind of more feminine presenting, I think is fair to say.
Yeah.
But then when Jay starts at school, where I'm is like, but they're wearing the boy's uniform, like presenting as a boy. And then he gets really confused and starts having all of these inner thoughts about himself and his sexuality. So that's kind of a subplot that's going on at the same time. But it's just, and it's kind of like a weird love triangle, but also like incredible intersex representation. And
mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what BFI has done really well with the film selection this year, is that they all kind of verge around a theme of self-acceptance and like not denying your true self. I feel like this film does this really well.
Oh, so true. Such a good observation. All of them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's happy days.
This film is so good, and like it's quite you can tell that it's well, obviously it's Korean, but you can tell that it's made for Korean audiences rather than Western audiences, like a lot of the Korean films that we know.
Yeah.
Which
I love.
Yeah. So it is, you know, there's some things that you kind of have to adjust to as if you only watch Western films mostly, or like mostly watch Western films. And I'm a person like that, so for me it took like a second to be like, okay, no, I think this is like just kind of normal, but it's not quite what I'm used to. But all of that aside, and also I didn't mind it at all, I thought it was super interesting. I was so engaged from the start because it was like so different
and it's
like
so refreshing, isn't it, to
just,
like the animation that's used to kind of support the story and the narration. Like, I think that really helped ground me in the story and kind of keep track of what was happening.
Because mm-hmm.
sometimes with films that aren't in English language, sometimes I can find it a bit difficult to follow. I didn't have that issue with this film at all.
No, me either.
It was so clear where the story was going. Not because it was simple at all, like it wasn't. It was a very well-written story. But I think that kind of helped carry me through the film.
Yeah.
It was very good.
For sure. But yeah, I loved it. I love that there was no conflict within the family unit.
Yeah.
That is something that's rare. And I love that.
Especially with queer storylines as
queer
well.
Queer storylines,
right.
Yeah.
There's always some type of family trauma and upset.
Yeah, and there was none of that here, and I love that. Like, Jay, sure, they've been protected by being homeschooled for a long time, but there's support for them going to high school.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, they're so happy and satisfied in their lives, in their life. Like, there's no, like, conflict up until they go to high school.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's so refreshing. It's so nice. I mean... Honestly, that alone was like, okay, I feel safe watching this.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel that Jay feels safe. It's hard to explain, but...
And I think it's so nice, like, there's not many films that I've seen with an intersex protagonist. I actually don't know if I've seen any. So it's so nice to have such positive representation of an identity that is just...
Yeah.
Always been there.
Yeah.
So nice.
Only one other time in my life have I seen an intersex character.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my introduction to intersex people.
What was that?
Anyway, it was in this MTV show. Remember MTV?
<You're famous.
laughs> it was in this MTV show called Faking It. Did you ever watch it?
I've seen Faking It!
Yeah, because it's gay.
God, yes!
Yeah, the sister. Someone's sister. The blonde. She goes by she, her.
Oh my god, I totally
She's intersex.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that. That's so bad. I watched the shit out of that show.
Yeah.
I loved that show because I was like, oh my god, teen lesbian drama. Me!
Love it.
So good.
It is good. Yeah.
Oh my god.
There you go.
Shout out to anyone that watched Faking It.
Yeah.
I think they just cancelled it with no warning as well.
I mean, MTV, does this MTV even exist anymore? You know how many shows there were on MTV? Awkward? Did you ever watch that?
No.
There were so many MTV shows. I mean, we've completely erased them from our memories.
Oh,
I swear.
Oh my god, you just gave me like a full-on war flashback.
I know, right? This is what I'm saying. Yeah, Faking It.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Karma, one of the girls was called Karma. Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course I do.
We got Karma.
Karma and Amy, right?
Amy.
We should do an episode on Faking It.
Oh my god, we should totally.
If anyone's seen Faking It and wants an episode on Faking It, please let us know. We'll do it on our Gay Actually channel.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I think I would.
We need to rewatch it.
I don't know if I can relive it. I don't know if I can do it. But I'll do it for you guys if that's what you want.
I want it.
Okay, I'll do it.
But yeah, intersex character.
Yes.
And that was my introduction to intersex. I didn't know it existed, I didn't know what it was.
I didn't have any examples. This is so often the case with LGBTIA.
Yeah. Like, but the thing with intersex, I think you can like kind of distinguish these two characters from each other, is that obviously it's a biological thing.
Yeah.
So it's not, you don't necessarily need to even be part of, like, identify as an LGBT person, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
But there is a lot of question about gender that comes into it. And I think that this film, with having an intersex character, also addressed so many discussions about genderqueer identities that in like our current world, or like what's going on right now, I mean, I'm talking about the West because that's where I live, but it's so much going on with it right now. And I think a lot of it comes from cis people not understanding it. Like, I don't understand what it's like, you know, but this film did such a good job at like trying to explain it in a way that everyone could understand.
That's very true, especially because the viewer in XXXY is given such a close insight into Jay's hormonal changes and physical, like, pubescent changes, which are difficult enough, let alone when you're intersex and you, like, Jay is very clear that they don't know who they are at the moment. They don't know. They've been told that they need to live as one gender. They're not sure what gender that should be. So then they start their period, or they, you know, are in the men's bathroom and there's no sanitary bins. Like, which, and I'm like, oh my god, that, I didn't even think about that.
Right.
And it does such a good job at being like, yes, these are the issues that we need to address. And it's so interesting that that's from a Korean perspective, because I'm so used to just westernized content. It's so nice to have it framed in another way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, such a good film. Such
it
a
really
good
is.
Film.
It really is.
What else did you like about it? What did you think of, like, the whole love triangle?
Oh, my
situation?
God. I just can't. Like, I'm so happy. Honestly, you know how conflict drives this story?
Yeah.
But I am so happy that there was no conflict with any of their friends.
I know.
Like, I was just so happy. Like, I was expecting it to come at some point, and, like, Sarah did act weird at some point. And, like, we knew why from the start.
Yeah.
We weren't even confused about it. And I just loved it, because it was just like, this is so nice.
That was the thing. It was so transparent for the viewer. Like, there was no... I don't think there were any, like, horrible surprises. Like, you know what's coming the entire time, and then you get to see Jay deal with it.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, without giving too much away, it's,
like, it's not,
really
it's not,
beautiful.
It's not really, like, super traditional in the way it tells the story. And this, like, it wasn't traumatizing, and it wasn't hard.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's a complicated subject, and it is hard for so many people, but the way it was presented was, it's such a hopeful way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some things were a bit exaggerated and blah, 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 because it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've talked about this before a few episodes back, but sometimes we as queer people just need something that's just nice.
Yeah.
And nothing else. Like, it doesn't always have to be hard or a challenge or full of conflict. Like, it really doesn't.
It can just be a nice intersex, maybe queer person being accepted by family and friends.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of emotional moments, but ultimately it's a happy ending.
Yeah, I mean, and there is conflict towards the end, and there is an antagonist, even though, I mean, I didn't really care much for that storyline.
I don't really know what happened. Like, at the very end, I was like, okay, so I guess this is trying to make a point about trolling, but Jay's happy, so whatever. Like, I was just kind of fine with it.
It was just, it really was kind of whatever, but, I mean, once again, I didn't really care much about having any conflict or making it more dramatic than it needed to be.
No, it was just great.
It was great.
Really great.
Really
refreshing.
Yeah.
I also loved considering a real to life experience of a Korean school and going to school in Korea. Like seeing teenagers just being themselves and like looking at their phones and looking at cultural like pop culture things.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, have you listened to this music? Have you like all of this?
Yeah.
Oh, this person's really cute, and like all of the school drama being like, oh my god, you fancy them, oh my god, they might be gay, and it's just tea.
Yeah.
And I just love, like,
I know,
but it was done in a way, because when things like that happen from like Heartstopper, like I'm always like, for example, that's my reference for like a school or sex education. Obviously I'm not comparing to Western media, but those are my examples as a UK person. I'm always like, not triggered, but like it's quite jarring to me, because I'm like, oh my god, no,
I'm back.
War flashbacks. I'm back. I'm 15 again.
Oh,
but like it was nice to kind of have that degree of separation of like, oh, maybe this is what it's like in a Korean school, and the younger generations are accepting and like,
yeah,
Jay is very popular.
Jay
isn't shunned at all. Oh. They are like prom king.
Everyone wants Jay.
Everyone wants Jay.
It's so funny.
It's so good.
Like,
I love it.
Go off, my guy.
I love seeing such a desired intersex character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just love it.
It is great. And also, it's really refreshing to see a high school film with kids that are actually their age.
Oh, so true.
And like actually like doing things that kids that age do, like I did.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, when I was 14, I was definitely like that, and not like sex education, you know what I mean?
This is the thing, yeah, sex education, like...
But that's college, isn't it?
It's sixth form college, so they're like 16, 17, 18.
Fair enough.
But even like Heartstopper, like you just really feel that they're that age and they're doing things that teenagers would do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just feel like Yeah.
I think we've all just been kind of traumatized by Euphoria. And, like, don't take me wrong, I love Euphoria.
I've not seen it yet.
Oh, well, they're all, like,
everyone was mid-20s. Crying about it on Instagram. I was like, I can't do that to myself. Soz.
I really like Euphoria, but they're all, like, definitely mid-20s, you know? Yeah. And it could, that would, yeah, that should be set at university.
I don't know how old the actors are in XXXY.
I tried to look a bit into them, but I couldn't really find anything about the actors.
I couldn't find a lot online either. No. So, obviously, like, this is all our own opinion and whatever, but it, it's believable, it appropriate, though, regardless, yeah, of their age. Like, it's very believable.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about some of the funny moments?
Please go for it.
I mean, I don't have any notes on the funny moments, but we were talking when introducing the film, and you said it was a comedy. I was like, okay, there were some funny moments, but
yes,
there's just some things, and there's such, like, teenager fears, like, things that you just want to never happen in your life ever. You know, you have, like, a list of things, and you're like, if this ever happens to me, like, I might as well just die.
Yeah.
And, like, I wouldn't even care.
Yeah.
So, what's it? I can't pronounce his name. Warren?
Oh, Warren.
He's watching in his room.
Oh, my God.
On, like, a big screen.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And his three sisters just barge in.
That's so funny.
Oh my God. Oh, the sisters are so funny. So good. Like, they don't even close the door. They literally go towards him and just straight up start bullying out of this boy.
So awkward.
I was literally like, if this ever happens to me, like, I would probably just, like, throw myself out of the window right just after.
Pass away. Yeah.
It's so awkward.
Wiram's character is really well done. I love the, like, awkward, uncomfortable curiosity that he has in being like, I fancy this person, so that must mean I'm gay.
Yeah.
Let me tap into that. And, like, it's so embarrassing, but it's when he's, like, watching one in the bathroom, just crying.
Oh my God, he's sobbing.
It's so sad, but it's so funny. And then Jay just kind of looks over like, what are you doing? It's so funny.
Oh my God.
It's just so ridiculous.
Oh, it's, I shouldn't so
laugh. It's just, I just love how he is just in turmoil.
Yeah.
And then this, like, yeah.
But he's so brave because he just tells Jay about it.
Yeah.
Like, he just, he's kind of like, I'm just going to tell Jay.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, gay or not.
Yeah, there's embarrassment, but there's no degree of shame, at least from what I interpreted.
Mm.
It's nice. There's a couple of funny moments like that when they're playing dodgeball. That's great. I'm trying not to give too many spoilers, but
yeah,
maybe we should talk about Sarah as well.
Because
mm-hmm. Sarah's the only one that knows at school that Jay is intersex. They're childhood best friends, and she likes Jay anyway.
Yeah.
And it's very much like when Jay starts getting loads of attention, Sarah's like, well, I like Jay. I want to be close to Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm never sure, because she does equate sexuality to gender a couple of times, which I was a bit like, not sure about that. But I was trying to figure out if she sees Jay as a guy or it's just Jay. Like, at least at the beginning. But I think,
I was thinking the same.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But I think it kind of, the film kind of demonstrates how it's easier for Sarah to see Jay as a guy.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I do think that she does understand.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think this is done, like, really purposefully, but at the start, we see Sarah and Jay meet up, and Jay is presenting more feminine. Yes. And was wearing, like, a pin in their hair that's, like, very, like, girly and whatever.
Yeah.
So at the start, when we first see Jay, Jay is more feminine.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah also knows that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like Sarah's only known Jay in a more, like, masculine presentation.
That's true.
But I was also just wondering about that. Because Sarah's so comfortable with it. Like, so comfortable.
It's all she's known, I guess. She doesn't care. I think it's when her friends start being like, oh, Jay, he's so handsome. Oh,
yeah.
Like, and then she's like, yeah, Jay is handsome. Yeah, Jay's mine. Back off, bitches. Just like,
literally.
I just love, like, that thought process so much.
Oh my God, so cute. I think Sarah's also just very protective of Jay, to be honest.
I think that's a lot of it. You're right.
Yeah. But I don't know about the guy thing, because when Jade gets their period, Sarah's like so there for her. And it was a little awkward moment in the bedroom that I didn't quite understand.
Oh yeah.
Sarah like reaches over to Jay to put a heating pad on their stomach.
Yeah.
And then kind of like backs away and gets all awkward.
I think it is an acknowledgement of Jay being intersex. But I loved that when she came over immediately. It was like, here's the heating pad. This is how you...
This chocolate.
Stay comfortable. Chocolate always helps. I loved that. A little bit of solidarity.
I know.
Period vibes. Recording this episode, I am not on my period.
Me either.
Thank God. Because last time we recorded in person, I think we were both so unwell.
Dying. Yeah, horrendous. I have some things that we could talk about gender specifically.
Sure.
Since it is a very central part, obviously, of the narrative. Well, I mean, the characters don't really distinguish sex and gender.
No.
Which, I mean, you know, take what you can get, I guess. Mm-hmm. But there are some very good discussions or moments in this film where characters discuss the idea of gender that kind of separates it from sex. So, for example, with Sarah, again, they have this discussion about what it means to be a man or a woman. And this is most of the film is in the binary, right? Mm-hmm. But they have this discussion, and I think this is what I meant earlier with it makes this topic very understandable for people that don't have the experience to understand it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, cis people like me. And yeah, just kind of this idea of how do you know that you're a man or a woman? Like, Jay brings it up. Jay's like, I don't know. This has never been a thing in my life where I've had to be like, I'm a man, I'm a woman. No, I'm just Jay.
Yeah.
And
we only know what society tells us.
Yeah. And it's like, I can put on clothes and look like a woman, or I can put on clothes and look like a man, but clothes, you can change clothes.
Yeah.
So that doesn't make who I am. They just kind of talk through this and like, the idea of choice and about how Jay has to make a choice. Like, Jay has the choice, and so many people don't have the choice, but does that make it easier? Like, people saying that they're lucky because they have a choice, but are they?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of discussions like this, and it makes it so approachable because, like I said before, I've always been cis my whole life. I've never questioned my gender, and I'm very accepting of genderqueer people, but I don't know what it feels like, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I know that a lot of ignorance with a lot of issues, especially queer issues, comes from not understanding it. And then you just have to have the open mind to be accepting whether or not you understand it. But the most case of homophobia and transphobia is just people not understanding and not willing to try, right?
It's the lack of willingness gets me every time. I'm like, just open a book that isn't just by a white cis person and just,
That's it. But
tap
just
into that.
The lack of understanding is the central problem of everything, right?
Of course.
Of ignorance. And this film, the way it talked through these issues just made it so understandable. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but like...
No, you're right.
I was like, oh my God, I think I understand what they're saying. And I've never quite understood it on, like, that kind of level.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's incredible because it's, like I said, it's a light film and it's a hopeful film. And it's so good that it still gets to the essence of it.
It's still educating your viewer.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why BFI Flare is so good. It's because this is what it does.
I love that. Like, if you have a non-binary person in your life and you don't really quite know how to deal with it or feel about it or talk to them, like, watch this, right? Because the way it talks about gender, it makes complete sense. Like, it makes you understand what it means to be a man or woman or something in between or nothing at all.
Or intersex or...
Yeah. Like, it really... It's in so few words and in very, like, understandable, like... base level language makes you understand.
Also, just watch more Korean cinema in general. It's great.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
it's not all just Parasite, although that is a f***ing incredible film.
The Handmaiden.
And The Handmaiden. We've talked about The Handmaiden on this podcast. Funnily enough, The Chambermaid, which I saw a screening of last week, bonus film, shout out, definitely a mixture of Portrait of a Lady on Fire and The Handmaiden.
Like, two of my top three films.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like if you like those films, you'll like it.
Yeah.
But yes.
For sure.
XXXY, incredible film.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss. Loved it.
Chef's kiss.
Moving on, we're going to discuss the next film, which is 1946, The Mistranslation That Shifted Culture, directed by Sharon Roggio. It's an American film that came out last year. I'm just going to put a trigger warning out there now. I'm going to include a timestamp of when to skip to if this is not your vibe, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The trigger warning contains scenes of religious and parental trauma and also discussions of suicide. I'll read out the BFI summary. Research into recent interpretation of the Bible results in a re-evaluation of the traditional prohibitions on gay sex. So that's their little description.
Okay.
Joyce, do you want to...
Yeah, so 1946, I'll just abbreviate it to that, right? 1946.
Of course, yeah.
Is a documentary about how the word homosexuality came to be in the Bible,
yeah,
and how that has caused decades and decades of religious trauma for queer people and a complete kind of like shift in LGBTQ issues within Christianity.
Yeah.
So 1946 is the year that this translation came into the Bible. I think, when was that published? In 1952? Because I was confused about the years that they were talking about.
So...
because obviously it's a long process to translate a Bible and new editions and new versions.
Yeah, so the 1946 was the first year it was written, but it wasn't removed or talked about being removed until the early 70s.
Right.
So it's at least 20 to 25 years where the word homosexual is in the Bible. 1 Corinthians 6:9 through 10.
Yeah.
It's the Revised Standard Version. I think of the Bible. So it's an American version of the Bible. So I don't know. What, my Bible history is a bit shady, to be honest.
I mean,
it's the Revised Standard Version, I believe, is what it was called.
And what is the verse?
1 Corinthians 6:9-10. I think it's chapter 6, verse 9 and 10.
Yeah. So I'll read it.
We can read that out.
So the verse is, "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor robbers will inherit the kingdom of God." Yeah, so basically this documentary kind of, they're portraits of multiple people, queer and allies,
yeah,
kind of delving deep into this mistranslation, into proving the mistranslation, into kind of tracing the history of how that word came to be in the Bible when it wasn't before, and alongside, you know, cultural context and political context, yeah, within the United States mostly. So the director is Sharon Roggio?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce her name?
I think so.
She is the daughter of a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And she is queer.
Yep.
And so for her, her whole life has been one where she's been ostracized from kind of having a normal family life with her parents, because her father's a pastor with strong conviction that everything in the Bible is true. Takes it word for word. What are those fundamentalists, I think? Fundamentalist evangelicals that take every word in the Bible for truth?
Yeah.
So, you know, her relationship with her parents, she doesn't get to have that, basically, because of her identity. And she goes on this journey with these other people that are also on this journey.
Yes, Kathy Baldock and Ed Oxford.
Ed Oxford, is that his name?
Yeah, so okay. Ed Oxford is a Christian man who realised he was gay.
Yeah.
And Kathy Baldock, it's not clear her sexuality.
She's straight.
Yeah, pretty sure. I'm pretty sure she was straight. She was married to a man. But the reason she starts this journey with Ed is because she met a lesbian on her hiking route. They yeah. became really good friends. And her friend's called Neto. She's a Native American lesbian. And she said, "Oh, you know, God doesn't love me, blah, 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 because I'm gay." And Kathy kind of goes, "Huh.
Hmm.
This is the nicest person I've ever met." if they're not getting into the kingdom of heaven, there's something wrong here. And then she basically goes on a journey with Ed to uncover loads of old editions of the Bible, looking at why, as you said, the word homosexual ends up in there. And Sharon kind of helps them on this journey whilst they're all sharing their own personal experiences.
Yeah. I think
it's very raw.
It's very raw. Oh my god.
Raw documentary style, lots of childhood footage, archive footage, animated drawings. It's very immersive.
Yeah. And it's what I find so interesting, which makes this watchable. If you're not queer, if you're not Christian, even this is interesting because it is a documentary that's both about theology and linguistics and culture and history, and about LGBTQ rights and activism.
Yeah, very true.
And you know, personal memoir and personal kind of personal history, you know. There's both of these things and they're combined. So it's educational at the same time that it's activism.
Yeah, there's something for everyone.
Yeah,
like, for sure. If you're interested in Greek cult, like ancient Greece or Greek language or...
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Classics.
And honestly, I think this is one of the most important like documentaries out there for queer people because it's literally a cultural shift. Like if this... What they talk about this, but it's really hard to spread this word and it's really hard for our systems to change. But the message that is kind of unveiled in this documentary literally has the power to change so much.
Yeah.
Like it's really, really powerful. But you know, it's baby steps. And I think this is a really amazing piece of work as one of those baby steps.
It's incredible, isn't it? I think as well, it really exacerbates that conflict between sexuality and scripture. So there are a lot of religious queer people, not just in the States, but in the UK as well and across the world, depending on what laws they're governed by with regards to homosexuality. But these people, they love their faith and they love the church, but they're also having to wrestle with an identity that the church doesn't accept.
Right.
This is a recent thing in the UK as well. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before. But the Church of England still doesn't allow same-sex marriage. You can go and have a blessing now, which they voted on. It was a very close vote. They almost didn't get it passed by the looks of it. But there's still not equality there. And so the film really exacerbates that. It's very raw. I feel like even if you're not gay, you can kind of understand that conflict. But I was wondering, Joyce, if you'd heard about it before, the mistranslation.
I've always known that it wasn't, that it's not true to the Bible, and that it's not actually part of it, and that it's been fabricated, in a way. I've always known that, but I didn't know the details, I didn't know that there was proof, I didn't know how far it traced back, none of that. Like, that's why I'm saying this was super educational for me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've always known that. I mean, and it makes, I think... If you think critically about things, you don't even need proof to know that this is a strong possibility. Because this book is so old. The Bible is so old.
It's thousands of years old. It's an ancient...
It wasn't written in modern English, okay? Like, it literally wasn't. So there's just
Hebrew, Greek, Latin.
Yeah, the probability of it being the exact same thing that it was back then when it was written is literally so incredibly small.
Yeah.
And humans make mistakes. I mean, they talk about it in this documentary as well. Humans make mistakes. Like, robots didn't translate this book, okay? Like, humans. No. Like, the more you grow up, the more you realize that literally everything's...
Human error. Human error. So much.
Like, literally. Like,
across history,
no adult is, like, capable of doing everything, okay?
And as Kathy Baldock says, they took a sin that was an act and made it into a type of person.
Yes.
That's literally what they did.
Yeah.
Because the word... There's two words in Greek that I can't remember of the first one, but the second one is asenokoitai.
Mm-hmm.
It basically is, like... sexual perversion, so like pedophilia. So they took that.
It's about power imbalance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. An older man and a younger boy.
Yeah.
And they took this act and they put it into what they defined as homosexuality to justify its perversion.
Yeah.
And that's it. The only way I knew about, I did know about the letter that David Fearon wrote. So I knew that he had discovered. This is what they talk about in the documentary as well. He had discovered in the 50s that, and he'd written to the translators, that he feared that the word homosexual would be used as a quote-unquote sacred weapon in the Bible, and that it would inspire hatred to gay people. And David Fearon himself realised he was gay. He actually only passed away in January of this year.
I saw that.
The documentary is actually dedicated in memory to him. But he I knew about, and the letter I knew about. But what's come from that, Kathy and Ed and Sharon's discoveries and literal evidence of translations and them speaking to scholars and academics and linguists, is so incredible. And I really was like, this is real. Like, this is an actual thing that happened, and no one talks about it, because... this is literally inspired... like, obviously homophobia was around before, right? But this is literally inspired decades of abuse against queer people.
I mean...
because of one word that was translated in a specific way. And that keeps me up at night. It really
keeps terrifying. Me awake. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... that it was really interesting, like you say, all the professors that came to speak and the theologians. Yeah, but what do you say when they're ends?
Theologians.
I can't do it.
I know what you
theologists,
mean.
Theologists. I'll put them like that.
I know what you mean, but I can't say.
Oh my god, the theologists. Some of them queer as well.
Yeah.
There was like an Orthodox rabbi speaking, and he had some amazing things to say. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just if all these people that are dedicated their lives to studying the Bible.
Yeah.
Right. And there was one professor that was Greek and the Bible. So she knew Greek as well, right?
Yeah.
So you have these qualified people, educated, qualified people, just saying how absurd it is that we got to this point. And
teaching it to the next generation.
Yeah.
That, how stupid it is.
Yeah. That the theology doesn't even make any sense whatsoever. Linguistics don't make any sense. Yeah,
and the church uses these passages to justify homophobia. And this is what, I think it was Ed that said this when he realised he was gay. He said, I felt like I was going through a breakup.
Yeah.
And that's so real, because his community and his sanctuary, his safe space, rejected him.
Yeah.
Because he felt one way. And that was really powerful to me. That's when I was like, this is deliberate ideology.
For sure.
It's not just like a mistake.
There's so much discourse about how, you know, in the United States, post-World War II, religion became so intrinsically linked with politics, right?
Yeah.
And you have pastors like reverends that are with mega churches, like Jerry Falwell, who became like just... Yeah. Everyone knew about him, right? Everyone still knows about him. He was so famous. It was on TV, it was on the radio.
Yeah.
Everyone knew this evangelical preacher, reverend. And he, because he appeals to all the masses and is talking to all the masses, and so many people are Christian, right? they just listen to him, and that's it. That's their only point of reference. They have a book with mistranslations.
He's quoting the Bible, he's right.
Yeah.
He's quoting and they have, the word of our God.
They have Jerry Falwell, and they have, you know, Ronald Reagan. Like,
this is what I was going to talk about, Ronald Reagan, because I feel like you're right, because this reprint, because they talk about the reprints that come of different Bible versions after this mistranslation, because they could only change the word in 1971. But how many versions of the Bible came out between 1946 and 1971?
Right.
So all many.
All these versions.
And then it informs public opinion, and this is how religion and politics come together.
Yeah.
You always see the politicians, when they were arguing for gay marriage, oh, you know, like, it's against God. The Bible says that man shall not lie with man.
Yeah.
Which is how it's written in UK versions. But the AIDS crisis gets me, because obviously Ronald Reagan was the president during the AIDS crisis. And it was basically like LGBT people were weaponized in like this kind of sickening cultural war. Like, the government just did nothing and just watched a whole generation of gay people die.
Yeah.
And like, that's not...
That's Christian.
Okay. Yeah, that's not what I understand Christian mentality to be. Yeah. Those aren't Christian people,
exactly.
In my opinion, but I'm getting too angry about it. But anyway.
No, I mean, it is infuriating. It is.
Generational and religious trauma ensues.
It is.
Like, it's, gay people can't go to church.
It's terrifying because it's all... it's all part of a discourse. Like, it's the word only got in there because of other factors, because of the context.
Yeah.
Because it's not a translation that has anything to do with actual linguistics and the words. No. And history. Like, it's it's what is, like, needed. Like, okay, sexual perversion, what is that? Homosexuality. So there you go, word. And that's it. And how many people read the Bible? How many people listen to preachers? And
I think documentaries like this really open my eyes as to how, it sounds really dumb and basic, but how much of a religious country the United States are.
Oh my God.
Like, and I don't really think I ever sat down and really thought about it.
No, literally. When I lived in Indiana, like, everyone was a Christian around me. Like, everyone had, like, Bible verses in their Insta bio.
Yeah.
Like, it's such so a big ingrained. Part of the culture.
And I don't really think I fully appreciated that. So I feel like this documentary has opened my eyes in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just, like, when you see it.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's talk about Sharon Roggio. Because she is, the strength of this woman is
insane.
I couldn't do what she's done.
Yeah.
First of all, made an incredibly amazing documentary, but also the strength of her to continue to have a relationship with her father despite their differing beliefs and like core morals, mm-hmm. I guess. Well, they have Christian morals, they share Christian morals, but he is so against homosexuality. They have this sit-down conversation and it's so raw, the way she's like, Dad, you know nothing about my life because you won't let me tell you because you're so against gay people. And then at the end they have a hug and it's like he just forgets it ever happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, how like I really admire her for continuing that relationship, but he is so terrified of his daughter being gay that he literally can't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And she's so terrified of losing a relationship with her father. Like, it's just so raw. And, like, it's amazing to see that representation on screen.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that's not dramatized. Like, it's just real. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, every scene with her dad, it was... And honestly, it's painful to watch. Not because it's just painful. Like, even imagining what that feels like.
I know. I can see what she's trying to do, though. Like, I really resonate with what she's trying to do in breaking the cycle of generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the end of the documentary kind of posits that question of, will this change for the next generation? Because queer Christians and queer religious people, there is a disconnect for them. They're on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
But the documentary kind of ends in that hopeful way of, we are struggling to get acceptance, but maybe one day we will get it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we will be able to get married in a church one day. Maybe people will, more and more people every day will realise actually being gay isn't a sin.
Yeah.
That's what was nice about the end, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I cried during the credits. I was like, oh my God.
Well, it's just all of those queer Christian people saying, you know, I love my faith and I love my sexuality. Like, you can have both.
Yeah.
It's just society that pretends you can't, but you can.
I have a little note about the dad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, honestly, it's striking how she makes this documentary and her dad is the poster child for everything that's wrong with people's unwillingness to learn and listen and broaden their perspectives, like we just talked about with XXXY.
Yeah.
I think this is such an important thing to emphasize, like, in this climate right now. And with this climate, I don't mean like 2023. I mean like the past decade or decade and a half, where polarization has become so stark. And especially, yeah. I mean, we don't live in the United States, but you see it on the news and you see it, you read about it online, but it's getting worse and worse and worse. Like, that country is becoming so polarized. I mean, we kind of are too, like, I'm not gonna lie, but you know, what I mean,
UK, yeah,
just since the internet and since globalization online, it's just been incredible to see such a shift in how people cannot live together anymore if they have different ideals and different morals.
Yeah.
And how everyone is in their bubble so hard, so not true. Only within themselves, but within the spaces they find themselves in, like online, mm-hmm. that they're unwilling to listen to the other side and unwilling to learn about other things.
So everyone's just shouting at no one. And
yeah. And, like her dad here, he listens to the talks that she gives and that Kathy gives and mm-hmm. Ed gives.
Yeah.
He listens to these people. Like, he's like, his ears are open, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nothing's going in. And he knows from the start, nothing's going to go in. Like, I refuse to change my mind. It's never going to happen.
He's like, well, I'll go because you're my kid, but I'm not going to change my mind.
Like, it's never going to change.
It's not active listening.
Exactly. And so he's kind of like, you know, the poster child for that massive problem. And then you have to, it kind of just shows, like, yeah, we have this thing now, kind of proof of, okay, it was a mistranslation. And there's been decades of trauma kind of for what, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But still people are just refusing to acknowledge that. And, like, that's why it's going to be so hard. And that's why it's not just straightforward. Oh, hi, guys. Mm-hmm. The Bible is wrong. But we fix it now. So change your opinions.
This is a PSA. It's okay to be gay now.
Like, that's never going to happen because there's people like her dad.
That won't let it happen.
That won't let it happen. And that refuse to...
He's writing a book on this.
On homosexuality being a sin.
Yeah.
Yeah. When your daughter is gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The strength of her.
Honestly.
She's incredible. To make this documentary is so powerful. And it's really going to resonate with so many queer people.
Yeah.
And religious people. So, big love.
There's this quote at the end that I want to give. I forgot. Maybe if we can look it up after, we can put it in. But I forgot who says it. I was going to write it down, and then I didn't do it.
Sure.
But there's this woman that's talking, this black woman, and she says, I know the lingering damage that misreading these passages will have on the LGBTQ+ community, because these kind of issues really don't go away. You might change the laws, but the way that you are still treated in the system, I can say as a black woman, those things change much more slowly. It's really powerful because that's where she says it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can actually change the laws, you can tell people that it's wrong, but the way the system changes is so much slower.
Yeah.
And it will take years and years and years and decades and decades. And that's just kind of it, right?
Damn.
Yeah. Damn.
Well, that's a note to end this film on.
Well, it ended in a very nice positive light. Yeah. That is true. But yeah,
no,
really important.
Very stuff. Good documentary, very poignant,
very brave
and powerful.
Yeah. So if this is like a topic that interests you, the Bible and homosexuality, there's three films that I want to recommend, and I think you've seen one of them.
Okay.
So one of my favorite films on this topic, at least, is Henry Gamble's Birthday Party.
Oh.
I love that film. I think it's so great. I've seen it like 5 times. It's nice. The director. I can't think of his name right now, but he did Sid, Princess Sid.
Oh wow! Yeah. Nice.
So that one's really good. It's about a queer boy in like a evangelical religious family. But it's not all, it's just a lot of conversation with his friends and, you know, with his family. It's really good. And then The Miseducation of Cameron Post.
Yes, which of course. Seen. I don't think we've talked about that
we on should. The podcast. We should one day.
We should.
I love that book. Have you read the book?
I have not.
Oh, the book is so good.
Wow.
Yeah, I definitely recommend.
Very nice.
And then there's another documentary called Born Again, and okay. that is about one woman's journey through, you know, being finding out she's queer mm-hmm. in an evangelical family. Oh. It's really heartbreaking, but it really shows you exactly what that's like for someone in that situation.
Wow.
So just want to put it out there.
Thank you very much, Joyce. We'll put those in the description below on Spotify so anyone can have a look. But yes, let's take a breath before we go on to talk about the final film. So, we're on to our final film. How are you feeling?
Good, good.
We thought we'd end on a very light, positive, uplifting note.
For sure.
For our final film selection, we're going to talk about Egghead and Twinkie, directed by Sarah Camber Holland. It's also written by her as well. Did not realise it's her master's project, right?
Yeah.
Because Joyce texted me saying, I can't believe this is her MA film or whatever you said.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm misquoting you.
University of Florida. Oh, some Florida university.
Yeah. And I was like, what? I completely missed that. It just adds so much to the film. I just think the production value is so good. I didn't even realize it was a master's project. Yeah.
So I read into it a bit, and they did GoFundMe for like funding.
Okay, great.
For
a love that.
Good solid moment time while. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I tried to look up the budget for the film, and I'm not quite sure.
IMDb but can be a bit.
Yeah, skewed. I think it was like 80k around okay. that. Wow. So they got a decent sum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice. She got like a grand for 36k, I think.
Wow.
From some, you know, if I did my research properly, I would write all of this down.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you were very prepared for this. But we had a little, they tweeted out the UK Film Review review. Okay. Thank you so much, whoever manages the Egghead and Twinkie Twitter account. Very grateful. I just think, yeah, I just see so much value in queer coming of age narratives. This mm-hmm. is why, again, we picked XXXY. But this one as well. Obviously, it's another American film, but a very refreshing perspective. So it's basically about two best friends. And Twinkie is a young Asian American girl, and Egghead is her so-called hapless best friend. And they go on a road trip to meet Twinkie's online crush in this delightful road movie. I love a road trip movie.
Oh, me too.
Think Lady Bird meets Booksmart meets the half of it.
Yeah, fair.
All incredible teenage films. This encapsulates that vibe so much. What did you think about this film?
Oh, I thought it was so sweet. It's like, so nice. It's just really like endearing and mm-hmm. cute. And like you want the things that you want to happen and just kind of happen.
Yeah.
You're like, yay.
It's just so positive and empowering, isn't it? You're just like, this is going in a way that I like. The pacing's really good. There's fun. Like XXXY, there's fun animation to kind of carry the viewer through the mm-hmm. story. Because I feel like the film kind of isn't chronological. It flashes forward and flashes back. But the pacing is good. Like, I don't get confused at any point.
You're very intricate at some points. Mm-hmm.
You're carried very well through the story.
Yeah.
And it's complex, but it's not too complex. It's just fun.
It's really fun.
It's so fun. I had so much fun watching this.
Yeah.
Just on my own. Like,
no, honestly.
I was cackling to no one. I loved it.
Yeah. It is fun, and you know, like you say, it's not chronological, especially at the start when they walk through what happened before.
Yeah.
It's just like so you're fun. So engaged and like, oh, I want to know. I want to know.
It's like we're there. It's so interactive. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, she's lying. We know she's lying.
That's lie good. Number 23, girly girl. Sounds pathological.
Yeah. Oh, just so fun. So bright as well. Like it's so sunny.
It
All
is sunny.
The colors are bright. The weather is bright. The road trip is bright. Everyone is fun. It's great.
Yeah.
But obviously, this is a teen rom-com, if you will. But it's not just about the romance. It's about this best friendship that we have, Egghead and Twinkie. They're so brilliant. Like, their chemistry is so good. Twinkie is adopted and a lesbian and mixed Asian heritage. So that apparently is why she's chosen her nickname as Twinkie, which they address in the film, which is interesting.
Yeah.
She's claimed it for herself. and she's empowered within that nickname, which I love. And Egghead is, he's a bit of a drip, but I kind of love that. But then again, he's going to Stanford after the summer holidays, which he might be awkward, but he's clever awkward. He's going to Ivy League, baby. Stanford's Ivy League, right?
Yeah.
Stanford is Stanford. So he's obviously great. And yeah, they embark upon this road trip because basically Twinkie comes out to her adopted parents. First of all, the way she comes out, I would never have dared.
Literally my first note, coming out scene is iconic. She calls herself a raging homosexual.
That is the coming out of dreams, but...
Yeah. She's like, Egghead kissed me in the cinema and I just realized I was a raging homosexual.
It's just the way he was like, was it not good? And she was like, no, I'm gay.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? Why didn't you tell me? Mm-hmm. That's what he was outraged about, that she hadn't trusted him with the information. Egghead, which is the source of conflict. Yeah. Which I love. But I also love, I mentioned this in my review, but everyone just assumes they're together, like even Twinkie's parents. Because they're a boy and a girl and they're best friends, so everyone's like, oh, they must be childhood sweethearts.
Of course.
But they're literally just like brother and sister, and Twinkie literally says, like, how can they think we're together just because you're a dude and you drive me everywhere? And I was like, that's so relatable. But basically, when her coming out doesn't go swimmingly, she thinks, I'm going to meet my online girlfriend, Egghead, you're going to drive me to Texas. And that's the premise. So simple and yet so brilliant.
Yeah.
Because she's got this online girlfriend.
Yes.
Now, we were talking about online girlfriend before we started recording this podcast.
I just can't. I just can't stand this.
Talk me through
okay,
it.
Okay, so her name is Beady, which... First of all, that can stand for a lot of things, okay?
Yeah.
So they know each other from Instagram.
Yeah.
Instagram lesbians.
Darn!
And then she clearly looks like, and I tried to explain this to Amber earlier, but you got it now. She looks like a Hey Mamas. BD is a Hey Mamas Instagram famous lesbian that calls herself, you're gonna have to bleep this out, Big Lover.
Well, so you will know the type of lesbian we are talking about, but you may not necessarily know this is what it's called, so Joyce is just going to walk you through it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, everyone knows the Hey Mamas. Hey Mamas lesbians are just the ones that are dressed a bit, you know, feminine, masculine, but like, they're like players. They're players. They got all the chicks.
They make weird dancing videos.
Like thirst traps.
Yes,
pink thirst traps, bandanas.
Yeah, bandanas.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know. I just have
those
such
a... rings and, like, long chains.
Yeah, just, you know, player.
Snapbacks.
Player, like, yeah.
Okay. Like, mask.
I'm, like, showing with, like, hair movements, and then I realize this is a podcast, so no one can see me.
No shade. No shade at all.
Oh, no, I mean... go off.
Yeah,
it's just,
love it.
The whole TikTok thing came about because the Hey Mamas are very serious about themselves, and then they present themselves on TikTok with thirst traps, and then it became like a thing. Like, oh, that's the Hey Mamas. This is a thirst trap.
And people make fun of that as well, right?
Yeah, definitely now, yeah.
Very satire.
Yeah.
I feel like BD is definitely
a Hey Mamas.
Yes.
Yeah, she's literally such a player.
She's after all the ladies. Yeah. I mean, no... not too many spoilers.
She even does that. But we're like grabbing our face with like your thumb and your index finger.
Yeah.
You know, like on your chin.
And she's a DJ.
Yeah.
Think anyway. Shane from the L Word.
But Shane is not a Hey Mamas.
Are you sure?
Like the vibe. Oh. But she doesn't have the attitude of a Hey Mamas.
True. Shane,
she's a player, but she's actually cool.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Think Shane, but I'm cool.
Yeah. Shane, but like, I'm trying too hard.
Yeah. Shane is just effortlessly Shane.
Yeah.
You're so right. I didn't mean to disrespect the queen.
Shane doesn't go like, hey, mama. Do you know what I mean?
That scared me a little bit.
Oh, sorry. So, BD, I mean, okay. So, we love it for girly Twinkie because she's 17.
Oh, she's so cute.
Yeah. She's cute.
Relatable vibes.
No, she talked to this girl on Insta and she's so excited. Like, this is her first, like, situationship.
Hopelessly enamored by this more seasoned lesbian. She's like, yes, teach me your ways. I love it.
Yeah.
She's so hopelessly in love.
And then, you know, after coming out and having a bit of backlash from her parents, she's like, you know, fuck it. I'm taking a road trip. I'm going to convince Egghead.
I'm going to steal my dad's car, and I'm going to get Egghead to drive us to Texas.
Yeah. Oh my god, her dad's car has, like, this massive photo printed on it of her dad, because he's, like, a real estate person. It's so funny.
Oh, it's so good. There's so many moments like that in the dialogue, and even just, like, the visuals that just make you laugh out loud. Yeah. There are some, like, get real moments, which you're like, oh no, that's more serious, but it's always followed by some light relief.
Yeah,
it's just such a fun film. I feel like that's all I can say. It is fun. Yeah, they managed to get over the tension of Egghead and Twinkie managed to get over the tension of their friendship by Twinkie's revelation. But then he drives her to Texas. It's so cute. He'd just do anything for her. It's so nice. Also, I've written down relatable how did you know you were gay montage. Do you remember this bit?
I wrote that down too. That was so good.
Making dolls kiss.
Yeah.
And just like loads of like quick shots cut together of like these moments from when she was little. And I was like,
Googling am I gay?
Yeah. And we were talking about that. And am I gay quiz, Sims 4, making your dolls kiss.
Did you do that ever with your Barbies or something when you were a kid?
Duh.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to admit it. It's crazy
because we were like kids.
Yeah, but we just knew.
Yeah.
Even though we didn't have the language to articulate it. Like, it's just, yeah. Twinkie is very relatable to the teen coming out process. Also, being scared to tell your best friend. Because obviously, like, Egghead is a sweetheart, but he is, like, a straight dude.
Mm-hmm.
So she has reservations, and then he just feels silly for not knowing, and he's worried about her because he's worried about BD.
As he's right to be.
Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, they both think that the other is being selfish, and that causes conflict, but it's all coming from a place of love. Mm-hmm. He just says, like, I'm worried about you. I'm worried that she's a catfish, and I'm worried it's not real, and I'm worried you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
That plus the stresses of a road trip in general, like getting petrol or gas, finding somewhere to eat, finding somewhere to sleep,
running out of money.
Because I also feel like America is just so big.
I mean, they're driving, like, from Florida to Texas. That's the whole South.
Yeah. He was like, oh, we've got like 16 hours left. And I'm like, girl?
Left?
I complain when I have to do a 5-hour drive up north.
Oh, like, my god. Wait, how far would you get 16 hours from, like,
from here?
From like London? How far into Europe can you get?
So it says, so Florida to Texas is the equivalent in miles of driving from Paris in France to Warsaw in Poland.
I love that.
Similar mileage, according to Google.
So imagine that, just casually doing that.
I'd love to do that. Do you want to take a road trip to Poland?
I mean, I love road trips.
Me too.
Absolutely.
Me too. I like listening to the tunes. This is, yeah, they're living my
dream. It's so fun. I mean, I've done a road trip runs in America from Indiana to Georgia.
How long was that?
Well, we did it over like a few nights. We had some stops. Nice. But it's, let me look it up. It won't be miles, but
that's okay. We'll forgive you.
So we went from Indianapolis to Atlanta.
Atlanta, okay, nice.
8 hours, it says. 800 kilometers.
Wow.
But we did a few states, like Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia. Fun. We visited things. Like, we weren't just driving all the time, obviously.
I'd love to do that.
Yeah, it was really nice.
That would
really
be fun. So fun. Road trip vibes. Should we talk about Jess?
Jess is Boba Girl?
Boba Girl.
Boba Girl, Jess.
Boba Girl is my favourite.
Mm. Oh, my God.
I love bubble tea.
So I recently got into bubble tea. I used to hate it.
What's your favourite?
Well, like peach or passion fruit, but I only like the tapioca bubbles.
I love tapioca. I always go for like a milk tea or a jasmine tea, though.
I've never had a milky one. Is that a boba? Because I don't... Yeah, what is the difference between boba and bubble tea?
I don't know.
Okay.
There's a really good place near me though. I just love, well, like Assam black tea. So nice. My God. Yeah, tapioca, love. But yes, Boba Girl is really cute, and I love that whole interaction with trying bubble tea for the first time.
Yeah.
Or boba, however they say. What did you think of Jess? Isn't she so awesome?
I love Jess.
Yeah.
When I knew kind of what was gonna happen, like I expected
it,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's gonna make her realize this is like a real thing, mm-hmm. and she's still gonna drive to Texas, and then she's gonna come back to Boba Girl. I just kind of had it, but their scene when she's actually at home with Boba Girl, so cute.
I know.
So cute.
And they've only just met, and yet they just have such an affinity with each other, like socially, culturally, because they're both exploring queerness, but also they're. For the first time, Twinkie is able to talk to someone about being Asian. Because Jess, she's Japanese heritage.
Yeah.
And so they're able to talk about that diaspora, and Jess is saying, oh, are you mixed? And Twinkie was like, well, I always thought I was Chinese, so I don't know. And they're able to talk about that experience as growing up Asian or growing up adopted from a different culture.
Yeah.
In America. And that's very, very great.
Mm-hmm.
It's very insightful and very done in a very nice, sensitive way. It's very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
And Jess is so sweet.
Oh, so she's literally like,
she's like, yes. If pixie dust were a person.
Oh my God. Honestly that. It's very nice.
And they're able to understand where each other's coming from. Like, Twinkie actually feels seen by Jess.
Yeah.
Which is very nice.
Yeah. So, should we talk about the kiss?
Yeah, you want to talk about the kiss?
So, we all saw this coming, right? When Jess is saying bye to Twinkie and they think they're never going to see each other again.
Yeah.
There's this moment where you think, oh, they're going to kiss. They're definitely going to kiss. And then Twinkie looks over Jess's shoulder at the car, and it's her dad's face. Like, massive, like, print of her dad's face, and she just completely freaks out.
I would also do that.
Yeah, it kind of leaves totally Jess. Get it. No, plus, like, you know, this the whole thing about her dad not being accepting either.
Yeah,
so it's a bit much, right?
And the whole time, him and her mum have been leaving voicemails and trying to call, and
yeah,
so it comes to a head. It's quite awkward.
Oh, it's so funny. But yeah, she kind of just leaves Jess, and then they drive to Texas. And then
encounter BD the DJ, which BD. Interestingly enough,
big
like
actually,
she's a big
head. Yeah, sounds better than big.
I think it's interesting how BD and Twinkie are actually never in the same frame. They're never in the same scene. I think that was a really cool choice to do that. They don't actually meet, and I think that keeps it powerful and keeps her like in the past, which I like. But yeah, I wrote down one of those lesbian / queer influencers on Instagram who loves themselves. So basically what you said earlier, hey mamas. It's understandable why Twinkie is into her. Like, she is just like massive lesbian energy and supposedly fun, and charisma. Of course she turns out to be an absolute tool.
Horrible.
Yeah, she's so horrible to Twinkie about, like, being like, you're not ready to come out, like, you're too far behind me,
because
obviously BD is very out and confident. She's DJing at ladies night,
like, out at 14, has lots of girls,
exactly, like pining after her. She's very experienced, so I can see why. I have no sympathy for BD's character at all, but I can see why they wouldn't work together. It kind of points to that idea of them being at very different stages of the coming out process and the self-acceptance journey. And we've talked about that before, about how it's hard to date someone or be in a relationship with someone at a different point in that journey. And, like, that comes with its own conflicts. So I can understand that. What I can't understand is how horrible it is to string her along, make her come all the way to Texas from Florida.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. I'm not happy with you right now. Twinkie is our girl, and you have disrespected her.
My God, she's such a manipulator. She's literally saying, I love you to her, and then on the phone, being like, oh, I say I love you to everyone.
Emotionally abusive.
Yes, like, horrible.
Yeah.
I was so mad. Like, poor Twinkie. And, girl, you know, she honestly, she's a good-ass actress. But yes, the way she kind of broke down after that, it, like, was heart-wrenching, oh, dude.
In the parking lot, car, yeah, park. We would call it a car park.
A car park.
In, yeah, in the car park, parking lot. Yeah, there's that poignant scene, and it's like a close-up of her face.
Mm-hmm.
And then who's there to save the day?
Egghead.
The king himself. So sweet. But this is the thing, like, despite the fact that they've been arguing and bickering about this situation, when it really matters, he is there for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a lovely friendship. He's there when it counts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so nice.
So cute. Because she, you know, she says some mean things to him, like, in her sadness and in her anger towards Beatty.
Yeah.
And he realizes that. And he's still there for her.
And he still hypes her up. He's mm-hmm. like, yes, you're a gay queen. Let's do this. Let's go win you your boba girl. I love.
Yeah. It's very cute. Very nice.
Very uplifting. Very warm.
Mm-hmm.
Very... Yeah, I feel like it would be... It's a real comfort watch. Like, if I was unwell, off sick, or, like, just needed some nice vibes in my life, I feel like I would come back to this film mm-hmm. again and again.
That's cute.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any final thoughts about this film or any of the other films that we've talked about?
Amazing selection. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank you, BFI Flair.
Oh.
Absolutely incredible.
Honestly, amazing.
The selection is so good. The programmers and everyone that works at Flair has done an amazing job, truly representing what it means to be on the journey that is queer life. Big love.
Do you want to do your little short film shout out?
Short film shout outs. Let me recommend you some. There is a category of the short film selection called Aging Without You. So it's without, but the out is in parentheses. This program features queer elders of various ethnicities and orientations experiencing the unique challenges and blessings of aging with or without a partner. That's what the program says. There's 5 films in this category. We've reviewed 2 of them so far for UK Film Review. You may see more reviewed, so watch this space. Oh no, I've reviewed 3 of them.
Look at that.
2 have been published, 1 has not been published. That's where my confusion was. So, Where Do All the Old Gays Go? Is a beautiful film. It's basically the tagline that BFI Flair have done is, when I grow old, I want to go to an LGBTQIA+ nursing home with all my friends and have our parties together. It's basically a bunch of the older generation of queer people in Ireland. So there's a couple of gay couples, a non-binary person, a trans woman, and they're talking about their experience of being gay and aging as a gay person. Oh, it's brilliant. So good. Oh. Short and sweet. And they're all iconic. Also, Right Here, it's a film from the Philippines, directed and written by Jake Munoz-Consing. And it's about a man in the Philippines who has Alzheimer's and he's trying to cling to memories of his lost love. It's very sad. Made me very emotional when watching. But very beautiful. And another one I've seen is Love, Barbara, directed by Bridie O'Connor. And it's about the life and legacy of the late lesbian filmmaker Barbara Hammer. Do you know?
I love Barbara Hammer.
Yes. So those who don't know, Barbara Hammer is a renowned experimental filmmaker. She made a lot of queer and lesbian content. And her partner, Florrie Burke, recounts with a lot of archive footage and a lot of unseen footage as well, her life's work and legacy. Within the context of their own love story, and it's very moving and very beautiful, and I love that they have included the queer perspective from an aging perspective, so that's a very good category. I want to shout that out.
Amazing.
There are so many more short films. There's plenty that I'm excited to still watch this week. Tabanka, it's set in Canada. And also Mooncake, a young genderqueer person visiting their formative relationships and ruminating on their identity. The list goes on and on. There's so many. There's so much good content. So many lost films as well. There was a lost 70s porn film that has been rediscovered. And
can we watch that? What's it called? I can't remember what it's called. I just closed this.
I love 70s. Le Bleu Mec. We celebrate the rediscovery of a lost masterpiece of the vintage gay porn whose legendary representation over the decades makes it a must-see. I really want to watch that. I think it's on the digital viewing library. So there are so many short films and feature films. I'm really excited to see Polarized and Jess Plus None. They look really, really good. The list goes on and on. There are so many films. I'm also excited to see Drifter. There's too many. I wish we could talk about them all and make like a 12-hour long episode, but unfortunately that's all we've got time for. But thank you so much for listening to this BFI Flare special as part of the UK Film Review podcast. If you've liked what you've heard, please be sure to follow us on Twitter. UK Film Review is the tag. You can also follow us on Instagram at @gay_actually. We have our own Spotify channel called Gay Actually, so give us some love over there. There is more queer content coming your way. We don't just talk about films, we talk about TV and culture as well. If you have any requests for any episodes, content, anything like that, you can email us at gayactuallyuk@gmail.com. Have I missed anything? Just send us some love. Send us some love, some gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual love.
Wow.
Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye. Yo, yo, yo.
Bonjour.
You're French now.
Si, si.
Oh.
Wrong language.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.